Listening to Kurt and Anthony on The Morning Drive on FM 96.3 and AM 620 WVMT.
Welcome back to The Morning Drive, everybody. Kurt and Anthony here on this Monday morning. And joining us online, we always love it when we get him on the show, is national columnist Rich Lowry. Good morning, Rich.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Great. So, Rich, let's want to start out talking about an article we wrote last week about the title of it is No One Cares When Joe Biden Breaks the Law. And you're talking about the student debt forgiveness program, which he tried once and got rebuffed by the Supreme Court, and now is back out doing it again. And how does this work? He just thinks he's found another loophole somehow, and he just wants to use it as a campaign issue to try to sort of buy votes?
The first time around is something called the HEROES Act, which was passed after September 11th. It was meant to be, you know, you're a Marine who has student debt, and you're deployed to Iraq, you know, and you can't pay it anymore. So it's waived. You know, it's supposed to be for individual cases. Supreme Court slammed what Biden tried to do. Now they're going to try to say, oh, it's something, a similar provision in the Higher Education Act. But clearly, if Congress meant for there to be mass waivers of student debt, we would know what it is. It wouldn't be a mystery. It wouldn't be a debate. It'd be written somewhere in black and white. And it's just not. So this is a lawless act. It'll likely get slammed again by the Supreme Court. But yeah, he wants to say, look, at least I'm trying. And this is not how the system's supposed to work.
And it allows him to maybe use this as a campaign issue, saying, hey, look, I'm trying to forgive all this student debt that, you know, and that certainly would gather support from some of these people.
Yeah, so his big vulnerability is at the moment where he's lagging electorally, blacks, Latinos, and young people. I mean, the numbers on young people are just astonishing. The numbers in all three of those groups in some polling is astonishing, but clearly they're really concerned about this. They haven't gotten much from it yet, but they're trying.
Why do you think it is that the polls are all showing that young people and Latinos have turned against Biden?
Well, I think Latinos, it's that, you know, there are a lot of fairly conservative Latinos who, they care about the border, they care about the economy like everyone else does, and they just think he's been a bad president. This latest NBC poll that showed Biden gaining a little bit this weekend still has his approval rating really low among Latinos and young people. You know, I'm not sure what explains it. The war in Gaza is not helping, but he needs to energize and get those people out. And he still could. You know, this is one of the reasons, even though he's a step behind Trump, you could still see him easily winning in November.
And you don't think there's any chance that the Supreme Court would uphold what Biden's doing, right? It's going to be a slam dunk.
My understanding is it'll be a slam dunk. You know, there's this famous phrase, I think Scalia wrote it, that elephants don't hide in mouse holes. So the idea that there's some, you know, the word wave like appears once, you know, in a 50,000 word statute, and that means that the whole statute could affect be overturned by that word is not how Congress works, not how the system works, and that's what undid them on the HEROES Act, and I assume the same thing will happen here.
How long does it take the Supreme Court to rule on something like this? I mean, it'll be done before the election, obviously.
I don't know. It might not. It just might be held in abeyance. It kind of depends on what the lower courts do. Now, they're actually, to be really technical, there have been three tranches. The first, the HEROES Act, which was struck down. Then they did a second one that's being challenged by the states now. And then they've done this third one, which will take a while to ripen. I don't think they've really written the formal rule yet, so you got to wait for that for the states to sue. I'm not sure this one will get challenged before the election, but the second tranche, which is basically, again, the same principle, might well be.
Now, Rich, let's talk about another column that you've written, and obviously this one is huge in the news as well, which is the trial, the Alvin Bragg / Stormy Daniels trial for President Trump. How bad is this case? I mean, it should never have been brought, really, should it?
It should not. I mean, if Trump is guilty, he's guilty of a misdemeanor that the statutes of limitations expired on several years ago. So what Bragg did is redefine it as a felony by saying this, you know, this misleading bookkeeping was really in furtherance of another crime, which is supposedly a campaign finance violation, And then he charged like every single act related to this bookkeeping as 34 felonies. And the way the Justice Department says, you know, at the federal level, you're just not supposed to do that. So then the statute of limitations for a felony is longer, so he just barely gets under the wire there. And Bragg's underlying theory is that Trump was engaged in election interference, right? So maybe you can say with the late payment to Stormy Daniels in 2016, yeah, they had an eye to the election. But the bookkeeping, which is the case is about, happened in 2017. Actually, the election was over. So there's no way that the misleading bookkeeping in 2017 affected what happened in 2016. And the hush payment itself is not illegal. This happens all the time. And it happens in legal settlements all the time. So it's only happening because Donald Trump's last name is Trump and he's running for president again.
And as you said, it may look sleazy, but it's not illegal.
Yeah, the hush payment is definitely sleazy. And it happened. You know, there's no doubt about it. And I think there's very little doubt about the fact that he had an affair with Stormy Daniels. Terrible. Shouldn't have done it. You know, unethical, but not illegal. And so they're trying to make the bookkeeping a crime. And the bookkeeping was, I mean, it's so highly technical. So Michael Cohen, his former fixer, he pays Stormy Daniels $130,000. And Trump says, I'm going to pay back. And instead of doing it in a lump sum payment, he does it, a series of monthly payments over time. And instead of saying this is payment repayment of a debt, it said this is payment for legal services. So does that shock your conscience? You know, is that a huge difference? It's not. I mean, it is misleading technically, but at best, it's a misdemeanor. but Bragg was desperate to do this. The federal prosecutors up in New York looked at it, took a pass. His predecessor looked at it, took a pass. He initially looked at it and took a pass, and then he decided, well, the political heat is so strong and people so desperately want me to get Trump, I'm going to do it anyway.
Why do you think, one of your other articles says, no one cares when Joe Biden breaks the law, but everybody knows, or maybe everybody doesn't know, that someone went from the Biden Justice Department to Alvin Bragg's office specifically to work on this case, but nobody seems to care.
Yeah, you don't hear about that a lot. I mean, the way I look at it, I don't know what behind-the-scenes machinations have gone on, but if all the polling showed that indicting and convicting Donald Trump would help him get elected president of the United States, all these cases would go away. All of a sudden, they'd find some reason to forbear, for prudence, you know, for prosecutorial discretion to flip the other way, but they believe it's going to hurt him. And the polling says it is. You know, I don't know whether it actually will at the end of the day, certainly. I'm skeptical that it'll hurt him much in this case, but at least you're tying up a presidential candidate's time, which is a precious resource. He's got to sit there, you know, and he's fallen asleep, right? Which I don't blame him. I would fall asleep, you know, around 2 p.m. I get drowsy too. And then they mock him for it and all the rest, they humiliate him and all the rest of it. Even if they don't convict him.
If I were Trump, I would embrace it and say, hey, I might as well catch up on my sleep. I've got to work later at night now. And I know that this is a foregone conclusion. I'm required by law to sit there. I'm not required to pay attention. I'm going to catch some Z's.
Yeah, you know, it's like when my wife used to make me go to operas. You know, the first hour, I'd stay awake. Then it's in the dark. I'd close my eyes. You know, no one knows. But, you know, there's a chance he can get off, right? There could be a hung jury.
That's what I was going to ask you, Rich, was to handicap this thing for us a little bit. In this jury selection pool, which is so hard, everybody has a strong opinion about Trump one way or the other. Is there any way there can really be a jury that's fair and impartial?
I don't think so. I don't think he's getting acquitted. But even in Manhattan, you'll run into the occasional Trumper. So there's a chance, you know, one or two of them are on the jury, and there's a chance one or two of them might say, nope, you know, this is wrong from top to bottom. I'm not going along no matter what. So I would say, I don't know, maybe a 20 or 30% chance either that happens or the charges get busted down back to the misdemeanor, which would create a legal problem, right? Because the statute of limitations has expired on those.
If he was convicted, could they put him in jail during the presidential election?
I can't imagine it. I can't imagine it, but Andrew Weissman, who was celebrated as, you know, and was on CNN regularly and was Bob Mueller's top guy in the Russian hoax, says, yeah, he should go to jail because he's a recidivist. And when he hasn't committed any other crimes, you know, or been convicted of any other crimes, which is ridiculous, But there are people who are desperate to do it. And, you know, I think that technically it's like a 4-year prison sentence. So, yeah, I guess they could try.
And even if they did, he might still win.
Yeah, he might still win. If he's winning on the economy the way he is over Biden now, he could easily still win, even if he's in Rikers.
Unbelievable.
Let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're live on the Morning Drive.
Morning. Quick question. I know there's a lot of concern about whether Donald Trump can get a fair trial in New York, but my question is, can he get a fair trial at the Supreme Court when he's appointed most of the conservative justices? That seems to me an incredible bias in his favor. So why is that not a concern of people?
Yeah, that's a fair point. I would just say, you know, they've heard a lot of cases related to Trump now, including after the 2020 election. There was this challenge to the election results from Texas. They didn't go along with that. Nothing they've ruled on has been surprising or like been inconsistent with their basic philosophy. I was talking earlier about this doctrine that elephants don't hide in mouse holes. That's something they've been consistent on. You know, when they slapped down Biden's student loan program, the first one around. So, yeah, I can see people bringing that up. I just don't see the justices as being tools of Donald Trump. And to be honest, I doubt any of them particularly like the guy. You know, they are rule of law people. They're standards people. So there's a lot they surely don't like about Donald Trump. So, you know, proof's in the pudding. We'll see what happens. But, for instance, this immunity case before the Supreme Court, I would expect Trump to lose and lose a number of the conservative justices, too.
And they're rich. There are justices that have been appointed throughout history who don't ever feel any allegiance to the president that supported them. Once they become a justice, they're independent jurists now, and they don't often actually end up being the type of Supreme Court justice that the president that appointed them thought they were going to be.
Yeah, I mean, this is the beauty of a lifetime appointment. You're free as a bird, you know.
Well, I can't do anything. I remember learning that in high school. They're there for life, so they don't. The idea is they're not beholden to anyone. And I'm trying to think of the justice who I think it was Reagan that appointed, who turned out to be one of the more liberal justices.
Well, wasn't it the New Hampshire justice Souter?
Souter. Yeah. Never forget. Bush. Yeah, David Souter.
Yeah,
yeah. And so it kind of proves that theory that they're there now, and we like to think that this system works. Who knows? Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're live on the Morning Drive.
Good morning. My question is this election interference with the Stormy Daniels hush money non-disclosure case. If that is election interference, how come it's not election interference when Congress has a slush fund that paid out $17 million to people who have had sexual allegations?
That's a fair question.
I'm not aware of such a slush fund. I would say the more of an analog would be Bill Clinton. I mean, George Stephanopoulos, who has an honored place in the media now, his job for Bill Clinton was to make all this stuff go away so he could win an election, you know, and he had a lot more than Stormy Daniels.
Yeah. As they call it, the bimbo eruptions, right?
Yeah, so politicians do it. It's you know, as we discussed earlier, it's sleazy, it's unethical, you don't want it to happen. You wish people were running for office that didn't have these sort of vulnerabilities, but they do, and it's happened you know, throughout American history.
Rich, you also wrote a column, let's talk about what's going on in Israel with Hamas. You wrote an article entitled, "Why Do Critics Hold Israel to a Higher Standard and Ignore These Other Conflicts?" What are you referring to there, Rich?
Well, I mean, you have these near-genocidal conflicts all over the world, sadly, in Sudan and Myanmar, and you just don't hear about it. And Israel is more important, and the Middle East is more important than a lot of those places. But I think a lot of it just has to do with the fact that people don't like the idea of a Jewish state. So, you know, the UN General Assembly is constantly condemning one country for human rights violations, and it just happens to be the one country in the world with the majority of Jews. And I think there's just a lot of people who don't like that and can't get their heads around it and will never accept it.
Isn't it true that the government, I know there politically there are people that hate Netanyahu, but at the same time, they've created a unity government over there right now, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, you can make Netanyahu go away tomorrow, and I'm not an expert on Israeli politics by any means. So you know, the settlement policy might be different. You know, the attempted judicial changes might go away. But the war would stay the same. Everyone supports the war. They feel it's an existential struggle to rid themselves of this terror threat on the southern border that created this, you know, massive, horrific pogrom on October 7th. Everyone believes that. So that's not a Netanyahu thing. And I think what Democrats tend to do is kind of launder their more basic criticisms of Israel by pretending it's all about Netanyahu. Like the war would be prosecuted differently if Netanyahu weren't there, and that's just not true.
What is, Rich, in your opinion, what has made it this phenomenon that on college campuses across the country, whether it's Columbia or pick another one, so many of these young people, these students, have bought into this narrative about Israel needs to be destroyed and that Hamas is, and they actually support Hamas, a terrorist organization. How'd this happen?
It's what we've taught them. You know, we've taught them the West is evil and Israel is supposedly a settler, a colonial society, and there's nothing worse than being an alleged settler colonial. And the Israelis, even though a lot of them aren't white, you know, they're supposedly the white people, and the Hamas is the brown people, and the white people are inherently evil and the brown people are inherently good. So you get this totally perverse mindset, and you get what's going on in Colombia, which is appalling and a debacle. And I salute the White House for having a pretty strongly worded statement condemning it. But this is what young people are. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And it's what they learn in the classroom.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're live on the Morning Drive.
Hey, I just did a quick Google search, and there absolutely was a slush fund for that. They voted against it back in 2018 to get rid of it. So there definitely was a slush fund that was being used forever. So just to verify it.
Thank you. I did the same thing. I was going to bring it up. I think Congress has always taken care of its own. And I think, you know, a lot of people just kind of know that that's the Washington way or whatever. And it really does lend into the Trump narrative that he's coming from outside. And none of them want him there. And they're just kicking and screaming as he just keeps doing better in the polls.
Yeah, the thing the last couple of months that has most underlined that Trump narrative is the Fannie Willis debacle. So here you have the person who's supposed to be upholding the rules, committing serious ethical violations at the very least herself. You know, and that's the Trump case, right? They're out to get me, but they are all corrupt. And you know, I wouldn't say that's true in every single instance, but it's true often enough to make that a really credible and powerful case for him.
Rich, do you think with, let's see, what are we, late April now, 6.5 months left before the election, so all kinds of things could change, but do you fall into the camp that either man could win depending on what the events, how the events unfold over the next 6.5 months? In other words, is abortion going to be the key thing that people vote on, or will it be the border fiasco or inflation and the economy? Do you think it's going to be decided more by events, or is it going to be decided as to whether Trump can listen to his advisors and sort of stay out of trouble, so to speak?
Yeah, all of the above. I think it's a coin flip that you favor Trump a little bit. I'd say maybe 52% chance today that Trump wins in November, but events will matter. You know, how Trump conducts himself will matter. It may be that one of the reasons Biden's gotten a slight bump in the last month or so is the attention's been more on Trump lately. And I think, you know, whoever this election is about is going to lose. If it's about Biden, he's losing. If it's about Trump, he's losing. And then just turnout's going to be hugely important. And, you know, Trump's now beginning to seem to come around in early voting. You know, his opposition to early voting was always insane, but it may be that people finally convince them we need to turn out our people as soon as possible as well, if they're doing that on the other side. So all that's going to matter, and I think it's going to be really close. I'd be shocked if it's not.
All right, let's grab one quick call before we let you go. Good morning. You're live on the Morning Drive.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Friend of mine who is a Trump supporter, a very conservative Republican, came out a post on Facebook yesterday talking about the terrible thing that we were doing in giving this aid package to Ukraine. What do you think Dick Nixon or Ronald Reagan would think if they were around today and saw Republicans opposing opposition to a Russian dictator? And I'll hang up and listen.
Great question. What would Nixon or Reagan have thought about this in regard to not certainly a lot of Republicans did support the aid package and some didn't. And if you can throw into that, will Marjorie Taylor Greene actually move to vacate?
Yeah, so I think that obviously Nixon and Reagan would be surprised. You know, it's different circumstance then. You know, Russia was a superpower, but it's still an aggressive, dangerous country that invaded another sovereign nation. And it just, to me, it seems a no-brainer. You know, it's expensive. It is depleting our stocks, which we need to be concerned about. But just to give weapons to a sovereign country to defend itself when you don't have to send any of your own people over there, and if they lose, it's going to be really bad for the state of Europe. I don't see much of a case against that. And I think Marjorie Taylor Greene probably will go through with it and probably will fail, because it seems that Democrats are determined to support Mike Johnson, which will be kind of, you know, I don't know, the last time we've seen the other party supporting the other party speaker. Which will probably be enough to get Johnson through November, and then when there are leadership elections after the election, then I think it could be in real trouble.
Last second, Richard, then we will let you go. Any chance, though, that if she does this, makes the move to oust Johnson, that the Democrats in the end say, you know what, no, we never vote for Republican speakers, so we won't, and they let the Republicans, those handful of Republicans, shoot themselves in the foot and look like the gang that can't shoot straight, and knowing that that will hurt them?
Yeah, I think there's some chance of that. As for me, that seems like the play for them. I mean, they want to win the House, and the more chaotic Republicans seem, you know, it seems it's better for Democrats. So this would be an act of, you know, charity. But it seems as though that they're embarrassed from the institution. They think it's bad for the institution to have this happen again. So you have a number of Democrats on the record saying they're going to support them. So the hope of the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world is that will be shocking to a lot of Republicans, and Johnson will lose more support and will end up going down. And I don't think that'll happen, but there would be some chance of that as well.
Great message to put out to voters. Reelect us, we can't govern.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Rich Lowry, we always love having you on the Morning Drive, so thanks for being on today.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, thanks, Rich. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Amanda's got the local headlines. We're going to check in with Fox News. We've got the forecast for you, and then we'll be back. We're talking with the newly crowned Miss Vermont.